From Birmingham, Alabama, this is ARC Stories Radio. The stories you're about to hear are true, personal, and told by the people who live them to a live audience at one of our ARC Stories events.
So it's a Friday night. My parents are going to supper club, and I have a plan.
I was really excited about Christmas, but there was something wrong.
I'm Taylor Robinson, and in this edition, we have four stories all about the holidays. We have a little bit of everything, but not one of the stories is going to be exactly what you're expecting from a holiday story.
I don't know if she was Mary or my other sister was Mary. I know I was Joseph. I don't know, playing the part of Jesus that year was baby alive.
As a Christmas gift, my family bought me an army duffel bag and a one-way ticket to Anchorage, Alaska.
We created ARC Stories to give Birmingham a place to tell its stories to the world. So coming up after the news, Birmingham's own true holiday stories. Welcome to ARC Stories Radio. I'm Taylor Robinson, ARC Stories Director, and I'm joined by my co-host and story coach, Chris Kinsley.
Today, we have four stories, all from an event we hosted last December at the Avon Theater with the theme of Tis the Season, Stories About the Holidays. They cover a wide range of feelings and traditions and include a story about the magic of Christmas, another where some of that magic disappears forever, and a story of one nice boy finally confessing why he actually belonged on the naughty list.
Our first story, though, is about a Christmas gift that completely changed our storyteller's life. Now, Chris, do you have any stories about a gift that changed your life?
I can't think of one on that scale, but the one that does stand out to me from when I was a kid was this Christmas when Santa brought me Castle Grayskull, you know, and all of the He-Man and Masters of the Universe action figures. And, you know, if it changed my life in any way, it just set me on the course to become the geek that I am today, I guess.
Okay. Yeah, well, okay, so this story is very different than that. It's a story about a gift that completely changes a life's trajectory. Here's storyteller Jonathan Witt.
So I'm going to tell you guys a story about a gift that my family gave me, and it ended up being a spectacular gift that just blew me away. And I didn't really know at the time just how awesome this gift was. It goes back to the Christmas of 2000. And the months leading up to that, I was a sophomore in college, and I wasn't doing too well. I was flunking a couple classes. As a matter of fact, I actually thought at one point I might be flunking out of school altogether, and I was gonna have to explain that to my parents, and I knew that wasn't gonna go well. I'd gone through a pretty terrible breakup, and I was heartbroken. And there was just all kinds of stuff that was going on in my life, and I lost total confidence in myself. I was lost. And I kind of wanted to just disappear for a while. And I didn't really know how to do that, but I just knew that I felt so empty. I was a walking emo song. And like, not like the cool emo from like the 90s, like the really crappy emo from the mid 2000s, like that kind of emo. It was terrible. That was me. But during that time, my big brother, he lived in Alaska, and he and I would call and talk to each other every once in a while, and we just touch base to see how each other were going. And one night we were on the phone with each other, and he was asking me how things were, and you know, I was probably belly aching and whining about something, and he just said, hey, maybe you want to consider moving up to Alaska for a while. I was like, okay, what now? And he said, yeah, like not permanently, but maybe you ought to consider moving up to Alaska for a little while. And, you know, you could get some things straightened out. You could, you know, find yourself. You could have some fun, have some adventure. You can live with me. It'd be great. And I was like, yeah, there's several problems with that idea, namely being I'm in school. If I went to Dad and told him that I was considering dropping out of school, he would kill me. And so it's just not a very good idea. And he said, listen, if you can convince Dad that it's a good idea and you really want to move up to Alaska, we can make it happen. And so I got off the phone with him and I was like, I think my brother just talked me into moving to Alaska. So I decided, all right, well, I need to go talk to my dad. Well, I don't know about in your family, but in my family, when I go to dad and I go, life's really hard, school sucks, I don't know what to do with my life, I feel really bad, typically dad's response would be something along the lines of, hey, how about this? Grow up, stop your crying, get over it, right? That's how it works in my family. So this is what I'm expecting dad's response to be. So I go in, I lay out my case, I try to make it super general so maybe we can fill in some gaps in the long run and that kind of thing. And I tell my dad, and he says, if you want to go to Alaska, go to Alaska. And I was like, who are you? He said, now, you don't get to quit school. You got to find some internship credit or independent study. You got to find some correspondence courses or something like that. And then you can further your education. But if you need to go to Alaska and figure some stuff out, go to Alaska. And I was blown away because I thought my dad was going to tell me to cowboy up. And he basically gave me permission to leave Texas and go to Alaska. So for that Christmas, as a Christmas gift, my family bought me an Army duffel bag, some cold weather clothing, and a one-way ticket to Anchorage, Alaska. I don't know what that means, but I'm not going to read too far into it. And a couple days after Christmas, I got on a plane and I left, and I didn't know when I was coming back. And I also didn't know what was going to happen when I got to Alaska, but I quickly learned a few things. Primarily, I learned that my brother and I are very different people. Aaron is a police officer. Everything is black and white for him. People are either great or they're bad. They're either awesome or they suck. Either something's worth doing or it's not worth doing. And if it's worth doing, you can do it. There's no reason to fail. And if you do fail, that's just an excuse to get back up and keep going. And it doesn't matter. He was brooding with confidence. I, on the other hand, had no confidence. I was riddled with self-doubt, had absolutely no idea what I wanted to do with my life, didn't know who I was. I could look at something and think, hey, that might be good for me, and then I could actually argue myself out of it and convince myself that it wasn't good for me. But as I was spending time with my brother, living with him, I noticed that he started rubbing off on me a little bit. And so I think back about the adventures and some of the things that I got to do while I lived in Alaska with him. I think about, I went on my first bear hunt. I'd never been hunting at all. And one day he says, hey, I'm going black bear hunting. You want to go black bear hunting? And I'm like, can I go black bear hunting? And he says, yeah, why not? Here's some hunting clothes. We'll figure it out. Let's go. And we go black bear hunting. And we figured it out. I didn't die. Here I am. We went on a 4-day canoeing trip in a river, and we lived off of the fish we caught, a bag of pearl onions, a bag of trail mix, and beer. And that's what we lived off of. And he was like, let's do it. We won't die. We're not going to starve. We got fish and trail mix and pearl onions and beer. We're going to be fine. Let's just figure it out. So that's what we did. I got my first job in television when I lived up in Alaska. And it was a job I had absolutely no qualifications for whatsoever. And I was telling my brother about it one day, and he goes, dude, that sounds like an awesome job. You should go for it. I don't really care that you're not qualified for it. On paper, it doesn't really look like you're the guy for the job, but the worst thing that they're going to tell you is no, right? Like, worst thing they'll tell you is no. Just go for it. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to go for this job. Like, he's right. So I go and apply for this job, and I get the job, right? And now I'm working for PBS. Whoa, okay, awesome. A little bit later, a few months later, this job in the summers in Alaska, you try to be outside as much as possible. And I had this opportunity to apply for a job where the United States Department of Agriculture was going to pay me real money to hunt ducks and geese and shoot moose with paintball guns. And that was the job description. That was, can you hunt ducks and geese and shoot moose with paintball guns? And can you drive around in a pickup for about 12 hours a day? Yes, you're the guy for the job. Not qualified for this job. I mean, I was qualified, but I didn't have any previous experiences. So my brother goes, you have to go for that job. And he's like, you can do it. The worst thing they're going to do is tell you, no, why don't you just go for the job? So I went for the job, and I got the job. And I think back about all those adventures and just the things that I got to do when I was in Alaska. And I realized that the whole time my brother was there just encouraging me and just saying, hey, man, it's not that big of a deal. Just go for it. Like, the worst thing that's going to happen is you fail. But failure doesn't mean that's the end. It means that's when you get up and you keep going. If you really want something, just go for it. And I realized that through those experiences with my brother, I was regaining that confidence that I had lost. And I realized, thinking back at that time, that I would have never had any of those experiences or had any of those opportunities or gained that confidence back if I had not had my family not given me that one-way ticket to Alaska. And I'm so grateful for that. It's been really cool to see the way my brother has just always, you know, he wanted me to make good decisions. He wanted me to be mature, but he wanted me to take some risks, and he wanted me to be willing to fail, but the whole time, he wanted me to succeed as well. And that's how he raises his three kids as well, and it's really cool to see the way he's raised his three kids, and it's been a real blessing to get to be a part of that and to get to see that in those three kids as they've grown up. But overshadowing all of that, the experience that changed me the most when I was in Alaska was this poignant moment when one night I was at church, and this girl walked up to me, and she introduced herself to me. She said, my name's Amy. And we talked for a while. And talking led to some more talking, which led to some dating and relationship. And a couple years later, I asked Amy if she'd be my wife. And that was about 11, almost 12 years ago. And she's here with me tonight. But Amy was easily the most monumental thing that happened to me while I was in Alaska. And I'm so thankful that I met her, and I'm so thankful that God saw fit to put us together. And we've been on some incredible journeys together, and we have gotten to do so much together. And it's not lost on me that I would have never even so much as met Amy had my family not given me that one-way ticket. And so I'm so grateful for the role that they played in the fact that I even met my wife. But what's really not lost on me is that in just a couple weeks, shortly after this Christmas holiday, we're going to get on an airplane, and we're going to go to the other side of the world, to China. And in China, there's an orphanage with a little girl in it. And her name's Emery Elizabeth. And there's no way I'm going to be able to hold this picture steady. Stage fright's for real, guys. This is my daughter, and she'll be 18 months in 2 days. We're gonna go to China, and Amy and I are flying round trip, but for Emery, we're buying her a one-way ticket because we're bringing her home. And I want to raise Emery. I want to raise her to be smart and to be confident. And I want her to make good decisions, but I want her to take risks, and I want her to be willing and not scared to fail. And I want her to grow up knowing that her mom and I are right there behind her, and we want her to succeed. And so when she looks back on this time in her life when we brought her back from China, she might look back and think of this time and realize that it was a moment when her family did something for her that changed her life, that changed the trajectory of her life, and it all started with a one-way ticket. Thank you.
Jonathan Witt is a videographer, editor, and producer here in Birmingham. You can learn more about him and find out all about his adoption by checking him out on Twitter at Jonathan L. Witt.
You know, when we all got together for rehearsal for that event, that whole one-way ticket hook or angle that is at the end of the story really hadn't developed itself, and we all kind of talked through it. And it was so awesome listening to Jonathan tell the story the night of the event, the way he brought that element full circle in the story, where it was his one-way ticket, and then all of a sudden it's a story about his daughter's one-way ticket. And it was fantastic. It was like a story ended perfectly. And that's one of the hardest things to do, is end your story well.
Oh, yeah, it was beautiful. I mean, there wasn't a dry eye in the room. And we have more stories coming up, including this next one that's all about the magic of Christmas, as well as some of the harsh realities we can face this time of year. That's next on ARC Stories Radio, Birmingham's own true stories. This is ARC Stories Radio. We're bringing you true personal stories all about the holidays, told live in front of an audience right here in Birmingham by the people who lived them. I'm Chris Kinsley, ARC Stories Story Coach.
And I'm Taylor Robinson, the director of ARC Stories. If you're unfamiliar with our live event, basically what we do is we pick a theme for the event, and then we choose 6 to 8 stories that are based on that theme, and we create a night of live storytelling around the theme. And this episode of the radio show is basically a mini version of that concept. So what that means is each of these stories were told at an event that we hosted last year at the Avon Theater, where the theme was 'Tis the Season, Stories About the Holidays.
This is also the 1-year anniversary of ARC Stories Radio.
Woo-wee.
And Taylor, I want to ask you a question that I did in our first episode. Why do we do ARC Stories?
For us at ARC Stories, we by no means think that we have the market cornered on live storytelling. That's silly. Everybody does it all the time, over dinner, at the movies, when you go out to eat. The thing that's so important to us is that we want to be purveyors of great storytelling. And we believe, honestly, anybody can tell a story, and that everybody has great stories to tell. And if you're just willing to take a little advice, you can do it well. And that's why we do it.
I really think that's the perfect segue into this next story, because there were many people who heard this one and really connected to it on a lot of different levels. And the reason is because it's not your happy, shiny Christmas story so many of us are used to. But I don't want to give any more away than that. So here's storyteller Melody Taylor.
My Nana was magical. I know what you're thinking. I know that you're thinking that all of your grandparents are magical too, but my Nana really was. She wore monochromatic outfits all the time. She had a bow for every occasion, and she was like the Mary Poppins of Nanas. My parents called her this word that I never really understood, and that word was eccentric. I always thought that meant awesome and magical. Pretty sure that is exactly what it means. And she lived in this magical house. It was in this magical town called Chattanooga. And it was in this magical neighborhood with all these hills and valleys. And it was at the bottom of this impossibly steep hill. And it had wrought iron doors made by my grandfather that I had never known. And behind that door was my Nana. And she always greeted us with hugs and kisses and her specialty, Eskimo kisses. No one else could give Eskimo kisses like my Nana. And I, being the favorite, if Eskimo kisses were the currency, I was the most rich. And my Nana lived kind of an odd existence. She took care of my great-grandparents. After my grandfather died, she had this great big empty house, and so she took in her parents. This may seem odd, especially because she worked night shift at Walmart. I thought this was normal. It was just kind of part of the wonder of my Nana. It always confused me when I would ask my friends what Walmart their Nana worked at. because I thought this was very normal. So she lived this kind of odd life, and looking back, it's very strange, but to me, it was just part of the wonder that was my Nana. The upstairs of the house was devoted to my great-grandparents, but then downstairs was this magic basement of red shag carpet. It was amazing. And deep in the darkest corner of this basement, in a room with no windows, shut out all light and all sound, was my Nana's room. And because I was the favorite, I got to sleep with my Nana. And this was really exciting because she slept in a king-size, motorized, adjustable, heating-equipped, vibrating bed. Magic, y'all. It was so exciting. And I was always kind of scared of the dark, except at Nana's house, because she would tuck me in, and she would turn on my heating blanket, and then she would walk all the way around the bed and climb in her side of the king-size bed. And she always seemed so far away. And she would, you know, put on lotion and wrap toilet paper around her head and turn on her heating blanket and turn off the light. And then about the time that I would get a little bit nervous about how dark it was, I would start scooting towards the middle of the bed and find her hand reaching for mine. And she would grab it and she'd say, "Are you ready?" I'd say, "Yeah." And we would count to three and she would turn on the vibrator. And I swear we would zoom through the night. And I was so safe. And I was with my magical Nana. There was one Christmas that really sticks out in my brain. And that Christmas, we were spending Christmas Eve with my Nana. This was not normal. Usually we went before or after Christmas, but we were spending the Christmas with my Nana. And I didn't really know why, but I was totally okay with it because that meant Christmas Eve in Nana's bed. Yes. So we arrive and we get hugs and kisses and Eskimo kisses. And then we see this massive pile of presents. I have four siblings. Christmases were not extravagant. They weren't awful, but this was more presents than we had ever seen in our lives. And of course, we lost our minds. I mean, we were on that floor, shaking presents, finding the ones with our names. And over my head, I was about 10 at the time, and my parents were talking to my Nana, and I kind of stopped what I was doing. My siblings were like going crazy around me. And I stopped what I was doing and I was listening, and they were like asking her where the presents came from. And I was like, "From the store, duh." But they weren't really happy about the presents, and they kept asking my Nana like where she got them and all these questions, and my Nana was like really excited that we were excited, and it was just weird. So later that night, we were downstairs in the magical red shag carpeted basement, and we were watching TV on the cable television, which was a big deal. And we were all very engrossed in that. And my parents were helping my Nana out with like just stuff around the house. This was normal. Whenever they were there, they were helping her with things. And all of a sudden, my attention was drawn to a conversation that my Nana and Dad were having over the answer machine. And my Dad was trying to get a message off the answering machine that my Nana said was on there. And she kept saying, "I left a message for Teddy," and that was my Uncle Ted. And my Dad said, "Well, right, so it's on Uncle Ted's answer machine." And she said, "Right, so you need to get it off." And he said, "No, I can't get it off because it's on Uncle Ted's answer machine." And she's like, "Well, but no, it's right here. And if you would just, you deleted it." And all of a sudden it became like, I had never seen my Nana angry. And she was like pointing her finger at my Dad, and he was like laughing, but it wasn't happy laughter. It was just weird. So that night was Christmas Eve, and I was really excited, obviously. I mean, it was Christmas Eve, and I was with my Nana, and so I got ready for bed, and I got in bed, and I waited, and Nana didn't come. So I turned off my lamp, and I waited, and my Nana didn't come. So I turned on the heating blanket, and that was really exciting for about 5 minutes. And I waited, and my Nana didn't come. And so I remembered how to turn on the vibrator, and that was really exciting for about 5 minutes. But my Nana didn't come. And now I was torn. I was really excited about Christmas, but there was something wrong. This was not normal. She should be there with me. I woke up the next morning and her lamp was still on. I couldn't bring myself to turn it off. Christmas Day is kind of a blur. There were a lot of presents, and I think that's all that my 10-year-old brain could absorb. But the day after Christmas, after another night of the light being left on, I walked up the staircase and into the kitchen, and there was my mom and my Nana's friend, Miss Aunt Kay. And Miss Aunt Kay and my mom were having this conversation, but it was in like that weird adult hushed tone. And so I figured I probably shouldn't be listening. So of course I got my cereal and sat really close to the television and totally listened to what they were saying. And they were talking about my Nana, but they kept talking about her like that she needed something. And they kept using these words that I really didn't understand. And they kept talking about taking her to this place that I had never heard of. And I really couldn't put my finger on what they were talking about. Plus, they were talking, you know, in that hushed tone. But I just knew something was wrong. And I agreed that my Nana needed help. I mean, she hadn't been to bed in 2 nights, and that was weird. And she obviously needed help going to bed. But there was just something else weird. And then my Nana walked in the room. And she looked different. My always on, always bubbly, always happy Nana looked tired and out of place and lost. And Miss Aunt Kay said, "Nana, get your things. It's time to go." And Nana got this funny look on her face and she was like, "Where are we going?" And Miss Kay said, "Well, don't you remember? We're going." And Nana just was very confused, and suddenly I realized she didn't have anything to remember. I realized Miss Aunt Kay was lying. I didn't know adults did that. Everything in me got so angry. I was angry at them because they were lying to my Nana, and I knew that they wanted to help her, and so I kept my mouth shut because I didn't understand it. But that adult world all of a sudden had come down onto my 10-year-old world, and I didn't like it. My Nana ended up going with Miss Aunt Kay, and the next day, we packed up our things and we went home. Christmas looks a little bit different now. My grandma comes and visits us from the assisted living. We can always tell kind of how she's doing by how many presents she brings us. If there are way more presents than Mom decided on, we know she's kind of on the manic side. If she just wrote a check, we know she's kind of on the depressive side. You see, my 10-year-old Christmas, I learned the words bipolar and manic depressive. Mental illness is a very real thing. I get a little bit upset at people who say it's not, because a very real thing shook my family and hasn't quite let go. A very real wall is between me and my Nana. There are moments when it goes away. There are moments when she'll hug me and kiss me, and if it's a really good day, she'll give me an Eskimo kiss. But I always feel like I'm cheating on my Nana with this woman I call my Nana. But there are moments when she'll grab my hand and we're back in that deep, dark, cozy basement and we're on that magical bed and I'm safe with my magical, eccentric, very real Nana. Thank you.
Melody Taylor is a vocal coach here in Birmingham. You can learn more about her at her website, melodytaylorstudios.com.
The reason that I love that story so much is because as an adult, we all have a story that's very similar to that from our childhood, where we got to kind of raise our head up and see this adult world as a child, and then we kind of ducked back down because it wasn't really what we wanted to see. I love that story.
You're right that that's such a universal experience, but I think many of us also share it, particularly when it comes to the holidays. We know what it is like to grow up and for some of that Christmas magic to just fade away. But if you are someone looking for some of that Christmas magic, we want you to know that we have that as well. You know, Santa and presents and all of that. We'll have it here in just a moment on ARC Stories Radio, Birmingham's own True Stories. Thanks for joining us for ARC Stories Radio, Birmingham's true stories told by the people who lived them and recorded in front of a live audience. I'm story coach Chris Kinsley.
And I'm Taylor Robinson, ARC Stories director. And today, we're bringing you stories all about the holidays. And this next story is a blast. And as you will hear, everyone at the event loved it. In fact, I think that everybody can instantly relate to this story. Here is storyteller Josh Pickford.
So this is a Christmas confession, 20 years in the making, a confession to my parents, actually. So I'll take you back to 1995. I am a portly 12-year-old boy, and it's approaching the holidays. So, or at least in my mind, this is probably like summer. And so I usually around this time of the year, I start flipping through the Toys R Us catalog that's like the size of a phone book. And I'm flipping through page by page, like meticulously writing down all the things that I will give my parents as options for things to purchase for me for Christmas. But this year was going to be very different. This year, I was becoming a man. And this year, I was a decisive man, and there was one thing that I wanted. I wanted a black Fender Strat electric guitar. That was it. I had visions of rock stardom, and that was the only thing that I wanted. Now, I was also highly intelligent, and I knew better than to ask for a $1,000 guitar for Christmas, especially given the fact that I had never even like held a guitar. So. Instead, what I did, the one thing, I literally made a list, sheet of paper, one item, item number, page number, name of the product in the Sears catalog for a knockoff black Fender Strat electric guitar. So I give this to my parents. I say, here is the thing that I want. And I didn't think anything else of it. I mean, a few months pass, I've literally not worried about it because I gave them one option of a thing that they could get me, right? So, but then December rolls around, it's like early December, I start getting kind of anxious. I start worrying, what if they don't get me the thing? What if they don't get me the guitar? What if even worse, they thought that I just wanted a guitar and not this guitar? What if they got me like an acoustic guitar, which would be offensive to me? And as a 12-year-old with visions of rock stardom. So I'm like legitimately getting worked up and anxious about this. Like I can only think about this. So it's a Friday night. My parents are going to supper club. And I have a plan. I have a plan to figure out if they got me the guitar. So they back out the driveway. I peek through the blinds and watch them drive away. And I put my plan into action. I head to the storage room looking for the guitar. I don't see anything in my dad's storage room. I head to the garage and look in the back of my dad's 1985 sky blue Chevette. Nothing. I then head up back into the storage room, which is where the attic is, and I pull down the ladder, climb up. I start looking around like there are thousands of boxes up here, but none big enough to hold a guitar. I see like all sorts of junk from childhood. I haven't been up there in years. There's like an old train set. There's this like robot thing made out of cardboard and tinfoil. And I think, how childish. And I'm like literally flipping over boxes trying to find stuff. There's nothing up here. So I think, well, let me go back in the house. So I go downstairs back into the house. I stop for a minute and I think, like, if I was a mom in my mid-30s, like, where would I hide this guitar? So I went to my own closet in my bedroom. It's not there. That's not where she would have put that. So then I go to her craft room. There are two closets in there, and I think this is a great place to put some stuff. So I open them up, and it's like stacked to the ceiling with stick-on jewels and puff paint, and there's no room for a guitar in there. So now I'm kind of stumped. I've looked everywhere I can think of, and then I think, oh yeah, like my parents' own closet, of course. So I run back to the other side of the house, go into the closet, I look up, there's nothing on the shelf, I look down, and before me is a wall of my dad's khakis and button-down shirts hanging, and I part the wall, and there before me are two boxes. One long rectangular one, one small square one, and they're wrapped. And for a moment, I'm like, I'm overjoyed. Like, yes, I found it, I'm good. But then it wasn't good because there could have been something else inside those boxes and I needed to know. So I did the next logical thing. I took them out and put them on my parents' bed. And I thought, let me, if I can just like peel back a little bit of the wrapping paper, I can see like maybe what's on the box. I can see the picture of this guitar or like the name or something. So I peel it back and it's a plain cardboard box. So like, I've got to keep moving forward here. So I continue to unwrap the box. I continue to slowly peel back the tape. I can't leave any trace here. I completely unwrap this long rectangular box and I get a box cutter, open it up, and then I pull it out. And there it is. It is the black Fender Strat knockoff guitar from Sears. And then at this point, I think, like, I'm this far in, like, I probably just need to play it. So I then I'll pull out all the chords, I unwrap everything, I'm like opening little plastic bags, and if you're familiar with an electric guitar, it needs an amp. And I was convinced that that was what was in the smaller box, so I need to do the same thing to it. So I also meticulously open up that box. And I mean, I'm just like full steam, I'm as fast as I can go at this point. Like I plug it in, I get like the chords and I plug them in from the guitar to the amp. And then like I sit there and I've literally never held a guitar before. So like I make some noise for a couple of minutes and then it hits me. Oh my gosh. Like if my parents come home right now, like I'm sitting on their bed holding the electric guitar that I'm not even supposed to know exists. I've got wrapping paper out everywhere. There's little plastic bags all over the place, boxes cut open, and then I'm overwhelmed with fear. So I quickly box everything back up, put them back in the bag, like put them back in all the boxes, box tape it back up, and then rewrap my own presents. And with the same wrapping paper, I took great care previously to not tear the wrapping paper. So I get them rewrapped, I put them back in the closet, and I go and then like turn on the TV and my parents pull up, and I act like nothing has happened. So I wish the story ended there. For my own like verification of sanity, I wish the story ended there, because that wasn't enough verification for me, because the next Friday I did the exact same thing again. So mom, dad, I apologize. On Christmas Day, I literally acted like I had, you know, never seen this. Like, totally fake, you know, smile. I acted so surprised, like I had never even played this before, and I had. So that's my Christmas confession. Thank you.
Josh Pickford is an entrepreneur, and his latest endeavor is an online analytical tool called Bear Metrics. You can find out more about him and all of his projects on his website, joshpickford.com.
Each of the stories from this episode were recorded live at an ARC Stories event, and we would love for you to join us at one of our live events. In fact, we have one coming up on January 23rd at the Avon Theater, and the theme will be So There I Was, Stories That Begin with So There I Was. Literally every story told that night will begin with that phrase. And this could be any kind of story. And we are actually still looking for some storytellers for that event. So if you have a story to tell or would like to get your ticket to hear some great stories, you can find all of the details on our website, arcstories.com.
And that brings us to our last story. But we need to offer a fair warning before it starts. For those of you who might be listening with children in your presence, you need to know that there are some closely guarded secrets about Christmas that we keep as adults. And this story reveals those secrets. And I'm just going to pause here for a second for you to turn the thing or leave the room. Okay, here's our last story. It comes from storyteller Al Elliott.
I never knew Santa Claus. I mean, I was born in 1972, and my parents were dating in the 60s. They met at Miles College, and in the late 60s, it just wasn't a popular idea for a white man to be sneaking in your house at night in amongst the African-American community at that time. Some things never change. But at any rate, we had Christmas, and we had like real Christmas, like, you know, the whole nativity scene. I remember, I have an older sister and a younger sister. Some of you may know my younger sister, Eunice Elliott. She actually does the traffic on Channel 13. Okay, so yeah, shout out to Eunice. So I don't know if she was Mary or my other sister was Mary. I know I was Joseph. I don't know, playing the part of Jesus that year was baby alive. And so that was fun. That was a good Christmas, but we actually grew up with Christmas, but I never knew Santa Claus, and it was weird because I would meet kids that did, and not heard of Santa Claus, like they had evidence, they done research, like exactly what I wrote on this list, I mailed it to the North Pole, I got it for Christmas, I left cookies, the cookies were eaten, the milk was gone, Santa is real, right? I saw him at the mall, I got pictures. Right? So Santa was real, and I would have these conversations with my sisters, and we would kind of, you know, talk about how, you know, Santa's not real, and we took it upon ourselves to educate our friends about the reality that there is no Santa Claus. Well, needless to say, I would get in trouble for this at school, but I would really, like, try to just get them to think about it. I would ask them questions like, how long does it take you to get to your grandmother's house? And they'd say about an hour or whatever it was. And I would say, well, so Santa is going all over the world in one night? Like, it takes you an hour to get to grandma. Like, he's got a really fast sleigh. How big is this sleigh? Everybody's presence in it. So we would just go on, and I actually had to just be told, you can't do that, Al. You can't take Christmas from your classmates. Well, that was fine. Well, time passed on. In about third grade, my mom and dad got divorced, and my mom became a practicing Jehovah's Witness. Well, no more Christmas. So I never had Santa. But then Christmas was taken away, and it sounds like it gets sad there. But all that meant was when we got toys, we didn't have to wait to December. It was just like toys were on sale. We got a toy, we went home and played with it. Like, you know, bah humbug, right? So it was fun. It was cool. It was fine. But it made it kind of odd as I was growing up and becoming a young man and started to date, especially in college. I had no experience buying gifts for a girl, right? I had never done it. So I'm thinking I'll get a nice scarf. She's thinking she needs earrings. I don't know who's right, right? You know, like she's had more experience, so I guess we're getting earrings. But sometimes my gift giving was a little off. I mean, I'll never forget one year I got her perfume. And it was, I don't know if y'all remember these perfumes, but they just smell like things that you like. So I got her like fresh laundry, right, as perfume. Well, I mean, she had to love me because eventually my gift giving got a little better. We ended up getting married. Well, as fate would have it, I married a woman that knew Santa Claus. Like, no. Like, really, really knew Santa Claus. She knew Santa Claus, like, so well, I actually found out that I had been pronouncing the holiday wrong. Like, it's Christmas. It's not Christmas. It's Christmas is how she would say it, right? This is Christmas, and it was special, and we was planning how our tradition would go with our son, and I was a newlywed, and I didn't want to lose my marriage over Santa Gate, so we compromised, and the compromise was, as long as our son didn't ask me if there was a Santa Claus, the secret is safe, right? But I did take the liberty of making up a few, like, just fun songs. And like, I think they're anti-Santa jingles, I guess you could classify them. If you don't mind, I'll perform one of them now for you. It went something like this. Ain't no Santa Claus, ain't no Santa Claus, no, he don't exist. Ain't no Santa Claus, ain't no Santa, don't make no Christmas list. Flying reindeer, magic elves, help to set the tone. Either there's no Santa Claus or he has a million clones. Like, go to the malls or whatever. So, thank you. CD's coming out. Anyway, I'm joking. So, I said, okay, he just can't ask me, so everything was fine. She made up Santa, signed all the packages, we would hide them, and everything was fine. Well, when my son was about to turn 4, our marriage didn't make it. I don't think it had anything to do with the anti-Santa jingles. But we didn't make it. She ended up moving back to California. So now it's just me, my son, and Christmas. Like, Christmas has moved back to California, right? But I'm a man of my word. As long as my son doesn't ask me if there's a Santa Claus, secret's safe with me. So this went on for a while. I mean, even some years, my ex-wife would fly back into town, and the whole band was back together. It was me, my ex-wife, Santa, presents. Everything was wonderful, was cool, until my son was about 7 years old. And my son came home from playing outside. He came and he asked me, he said, Dad, do you believe in Santa Claus? I know what you're thinking. I can't wait to tell him. But as an adult, I've actually had things that I've believed in taken from me. And it hurts, like really, really bad. Like if you've ever believed in something and then you found out, hey, that just doesn't exist, that's a painful thing. And he's 7 and I love him. So I really didn't want to crush this whole thing, right? So I did what any great parent would do, I stalled. And so I asked him, why do you ask? He said, well, I noticed that the older kids don't believe in Santa Claus, but the younger kids say that there is a Santa Claus. Very good. Well, this was about 2006, and the internet was a thing, and so, you know, I went on the internet and looked up Santa Claus, St. Nicholas, myths, fables, North Pole, what's there, what's not there, and just, you know, gave it to him straight, like, hey, yeah, it's a myth, it's all made up. Merry Christmas, right? And my son is there in tears, like, he's crushed, he's crying, and I tried to console him the best I could. You know, I told him, I said, Anthony, listen, we've always told you that telling the truth is what you're supposed to do. And I want you to know that if you come and ask me a question, I'm gonna always be honest with you. And so when you came and asked me that, you know, it was hard to do, but I wanted to be honest with you and tell you the truth. And listen, it doesn't mean that Christmas is over. We'll still put up a tree. You'll still get packages. They'll be wrapped. Everything will be wonderful. I'll even still eat the cookies, right? Like, it's beautiful. And he looked at me, he said, I didn't ask you that. I said, yes, you did. You came into the house. He said, no. I asked you if you believed in Santa Claus, not if there was a Santa Claus. Ah. So the moral to the story is actually 2 morals. The first moral to the story is, if you're a parent, be a good listener. That's the first thing. But the second thing, it kind of made me really think about what my Christmas tradition was. Like all this time, all I was trying to do was not lie to my son about Santa Claus. And now that's over. Right? As human beings, we can't feel speed. We can feel changes in speed. We can feel acceleration and deceleration. But if you're on a plane going 500 miles an hour, you don't know it, right? Because there's no change in the speed. Well, traditions are basically patterns of normalcy. The importance of tradition is when everything is getting kind of crazy and squirrely, the way that we know is because we have something normal to compare it to. And that's kind of what Christmas and traditions are. And so my big takeaway from that moment is I realized that I had never planned anything for a Christmas tradition other than that. Everything else was just kind of happening. There's a doctor, I said I was going to remember her name, Dr. Hartwell Walker. Yeah. She talked about the importance of tradition the same way, but she kind of put it like this way. Like when you wake up in the morning, let's say that you have breakfast and you exercise and you meditate and you go to work. Well, when a lot of crazy things are happening, that's how you know. If you don't have any order in your life, as crazy as everything else gets, you really don't know it. There is no change for you, right? So moving forward, I think now, from now on, I believe this. If you're going to celebrate Christmas, you should do it on purpose and with purpose. Merry Christmas.
Al Elliott is a father and educator and currently works as a language arts teacher. Learn more about him at his website, elocation.com.
Thanks for joining us. And thanks for supporting ARC Stories Radio. And from all of us at ARC Stories, we want to wish you and your family and all your loved ones the best holiday season you can possibly have. And we are looking forward to bringing you more great stories in the year ahead.
This program is produced in partnership with WBHM. We especially need to thank Michael Crowell, Program Director at WBHM, as well as Audrey Atkins, Marketing Manager, Will Dahlberg, Membership Manager, and Rachel Lindley, News Director. The General Manager for WBHM is Scott Hanley. Recording and mastering was by Eric Chapman from Symmetric Sound. Up Air Creative does all of our design, and Territory 3 provides our website. Special thanks to Aaron Moon, Nate Dreger, and Senia Etheridge for making this episode possible. If you like today's stories, please subscribe to our podcast. You can find it on iTunes, SoundCloud, and on our website, arcstories.com. There, you can listen to other stories, you can stay up to date on all of our events, and you can even submit your own story. After all, we are always asking, what's your story?